Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
All persecutors can do is kill the body. And I don't want to act for a moment that that's a light thing. It's a heavy thing. It's a terrible thing. But God has the ultimate power over life and death for the believer. Do you believe that? Do you believe that ultimately your life is in God's hands and you cannot be taken from this earth until your life has been lived the exact number of days that God has for you?
Most of Jesus' disciples died as martyrs. In today's study, Pastor David will talk about Jesus' words that they should not fear persecution. Same is true for us today. Jesus says we should not fear who can kill your body, but fear him who can cast one into hell. Jesus spoke about hell more than anyone else in the Bible. He warns that this truly is what we should be concerned about. The Lord doesn't forget the persecuted people. If we confess him before men, he will confess us before God. Now, here's Pastor David with part one of his message, Witness of the Confessors.
We're going to begin tonight at Luke chapter 12, but I really want to start by reading the last two verses of chapter 11. Last two verses of Luke chapter 11. If you remember, it was that great dinner party that Jesus had at the home of the Pharisee, where it really would have been wonderful to be at that, to experience Jesus confronting them. But verse 53, it says, "And as he said these things to them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to assail him vehemently and to cross-examine him about many things, lying in wait for him and seeking to catch him in something that he might say that they might accuse him." This is a season of rising hostility between Jesus and the religious leaders. So even though the conflict between Jesus and the religious leaders was becoming more intense, look at how the common people received Jesus. Verse 1, "In the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, 'Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and whatever you've spoken in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops.'" The first thing you have to understand about this brief little section is verse 1 begins by telling us, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered. Picture in your mind a vast crowd surrounding Jesus. The implication in the original Greek is something like this: thousands upon thousands, literally 10,000s upon 10,000s. So I'm not going to say that there were 20,000 people there, but there were thousands pressing in around Jesus. Now you can just imagine what a rush this was for the disciples. There are the disciples, and they more than ever have the sense, we are on the winning team. This is it. This is everything we wanted, everything we hoped for. This is the kind of crowd reaction and messianic fervor that can carry Jesus right into that high status of kingship that we've always longed for. This is it. We're finally coming into his own. That crowd is so big that verse 1 says that they trampled one another. And in the midst of that, please notice what it says. In verse 1, it says, he began to say to his disciples. In other words, this little teaching that Jesus gave was not primarily to the multitude. Now, I don't think he whispered it to his disciples, but he directed it to his disciples. I don't have any doubt that people standing around heard what he said to his disciples, but he's not teaching the multitude. He's instructing the disciples. And what does he say? He says, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy." At this moment of what seemed to be their tremendous success, he warns them about the danger of hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is like leaven, and that's what Jesus says. And you know what leaven is, don't you? Leaven is yeast. It's that material. Isn't it like a mold or a fungus or something like that? Something that you put within bread dough to make it rise and swell up. Well, hypocrisy is like leaven in the sense that it only takes a little bit of it to affect an entire mass. I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to bake bread. And she wouldn't do it all the time, but she would do it, you know, fairly regularly. She'd bake bread, and she had this one certain bowl that the dough would always go in, and she'd just put the littlest little pinch of yeast in, and that whole lump of dough would swell up so big. Now, the reason why I remember the lump of dough swelling up so big was because at a certain time in the process, she wanted one of the kids to come, and we got to punch the dough. And that was like a big deal, you know. You know, oh, good, Mom, can I punch the dough? Well, you did it because it swelled up in this way. Again, this was especially important for the disciples to hear because of their time of tremendous popularity. They had to be reminded of the danger of hypocrisy. I would say this, that oftentimes the danger of hypocrisy, the temptation to hypocrisy, is the greatest for those who enjoy some measure of popularity or success. So, what did Jesus say? Well, this was sort of his antidote. Look at verse 2. There's nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. It's been said, and to tell you the truth, I don't know if it's strictly a biblically accurate statement, so I don't want you to take it too literally, because I'm not going to give you a Bible verse here. I'm going to give you a little proverb, not from the book of Proverbs, but just, well, I'll just say it. Secret sin on earth is open scandal in heaven. I mean, it's known. Heaven knows. You may keep it very well hidden. Your hypocrisy may be known only to you and God. Nobody else knows how terrible, but God knows, and it's known in heaven. And this is what Jesus wanted the apostles to remember. He wanted them to remember that even though you keep it secret here, there will come the day when it will be revealed because the truth must be shown. The hypocrite wears an actor's mask, but one day, in some fashion, that mask will be ripped off and everybody will see the hypocrite for what they actually are. Now, in light of that, Jesus continues, starting now at verse 4. And I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who can kill the body, and after that have no more they can do. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has power to cast into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him. Now, I find this interesting in verse 4. Jesus says, and I say to you, friends. Okay, verses 2 and 3, he was addressing the disciples. It clearly says that. Who is he addressing starting at verse 4? Well, I think, again, he's speaking to the disciples, but again, he doesn't mind if the whole multitude hears. So maybe he's speaking to the apostles, but speaking to them in sort of a loud voice. And what does he say? He says, verse 4, do not be afraid of those who kill the body. Jesus spoke to them very upfront, very directly about their martyrdom. Now, please remember this. This is the time when they have thousands upon thousands of supporters and people around them who love them. And Jesus says, now I want to warn you about the danger of martyrdom. You're flying high now. Seems like everybody loves you. But let me warn you about trouble coming. And when you think about it, when Jesus spoke those words, he says, do not be afraid of those who kill the body. When he looked around and made eye contact with each one of his 12 disciples, he knew that every one of those 12 disciples, except for Judas who committed suicide, and except for John who they tried to kill but couldn't, 10 of those 12 would die martyrs' deaths. Now that's a heavy thing to look a man whom you know is going to be a martyr and say, I want you to prepare for it. I want you to get ready for it. I want you to have that mentality right now. And this is the mentality you have to have. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body. Now, those are words that are very easy to say. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a very difficult thing. Because killing the body is a very terrible thing. It's no light thing. And those people who were persecuted were just astounded at what they endured. But Jesus recognizes that even though they're popular among the multitudes at the moment, he just faced this incredible opposition that's spoken of at the end of chapter 11. And I think as much as anything, I don't think that Jesus was saying this to himself, but I do think he was saying it about himself. I think Jesus had come to that place of resolution where he says, I am not afraid of you who want to kill my body. I am not. That doesn't fill me with fear. It doesn't fill me with wonderful anticipation. I'm going to pray in the Garden of Gethsemane that if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me. But there was no other way. And so Jesus accepted his fate. And when he looked at Pilate and looked him in the eye, you could tell that there would be an exchange between them and say, Pilate, I'm not afraid of you, but you're afraid of me, aren't you? Because Jesus wasn't afraid of those who would kill the body. Why? Because verse 4, he says, after that, have no more that they can do. All persecutors can do is kill the body. And I don't want to act for a moment that that's a light thing. It's a heavy thing. It's a terrible thing. But God has the ultimate power over life and death for the believer. Do you believe that? Do you believe that ultimately your life is in God's hands and you cannot be taken from this earth until your life has been lived the exact number of days that God has for you? Until that time, you're invulnerable, and when that time comes, there's nothing that can do to keep you on this earth. God is in control of such things. But therefore, keeping that perspective, it will help us to not be so afraid of our persecutors, but instead to have a healthy respect of God that makes us more concerned with obeying God than obeying any man. Now, he says something very interesting there in verse 5. He says, fear him who, after he is killed, has power to cast into hell. Who is he speaking of? I don't believe he's speaking of Satan, actually. No. Because does Satan have the power to cast my soul into hell? I think who he's speaking is fear the Lord. Honor the Lord. But please notice this. He says to cast the soul into hell. The word translated hell there in verse 5 is Gehenna. And it's derived from a geographical place in Jerusalem known as the Valley of Hinnom, which was located on the south and west sides of Jerusalem. It still is located there. In the Old Testament, it was a place of child sacrifice to the pagan god Molech. And then later on, the reforming king Josiah said, no more is Molech going to be worshipped in the Valley of Hinnom. We're going to destroy those idolatrous places. And to commemorate what the place was morally and spiritually, he made it a garbage dump. That's what it became. But the smoldering fires and the stench that came from the garbage dump in the Valley of Hinnom made it a fit representation of what hell would be like. And so they used it as a figure of speech. This connects with what we consider later on in the Bible to be the lake of fire, especially if it's mentioned in Revelation chapter 19 and Revelation chapter 20. But I just want to make you aware, Jesus spoke of this as a real place. It's real. And if people don't want to dwell on the idea of hell, I don't blame them. It's not a pleasant thing to think about. It's not a pleasant thing to contemplate. But I'll just say this and then move on because we got a lot to consider tonight. Nobody spoke about hell in the Bible more than Jesus Christ. This is, I believe, because he's the only one given to us in the Bible who actually saw it and knew what it would be like. And therefore, Jesus spoke more and warned more about hell than any other biblical figure. That's why he says, verse 5, yes, I say to you, fear him. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm just very happy to tell you tonight that through the history of the church, there have been thousands upon thousands of amazingly godly examples of people who have held their courage and to the bitter end they have stood and they have endured the most severe and serious persecutions. There have been people who bravely stood in the arena floor while literally lions pounced upon them or gladiators cut their heads off. There were Christians who stood courageously while literally, and I don't say this to gross you out, but just to be very straightforward with you, while the madman Caesar Nero coated their bodies with tar and lit them alive as torches for his garden. There are the stories of Christians who, when they would come to the stake that they would be burned at, would go up to it and kiss it and embrace it as the instrument that would bring them to heaven. There are the Christians that, when they would come to the stake and they would be chained to the stake. I just read such a story today. A Christian woman was chained to the stake with a chain around her neck holding her when she was going to be burned. And you know what she said? She said, "Oh, what a pleasant scarf God has given me." Story after story of the remarkable, could I just say, seemingly otherworldly courage in the face of suffering and death. Now, I don't know about you, but I read that, and if I'm honest with myself, I say, no way, I couldn't do it. It's beyond me. But this is what I would hope. I would hope that in the moment of that extremity, God would show to me the same grace that he showed to them. And this is the beautiful story of God's work throughout the centuries. The church has a glorious, has an illustrious history of the persecuted martyrs who have laid down their life in bravery and nobility. Verse 6. "Are not 5 sparrows sold for 2 copper coins? And not one of them is forgotten before God, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." Isn't it beautiful? God here is drawing the argument, or Jesus here, as he is drawing the argument, saying, not one of these sparrows is forgotten before God. If God remembers the sparrows, he's not going to forget you, so don't lose heart. Oh, there's that persecuted one enduring some terrible suffering in a prison. There's the persecuted one. Right now, we should say, here's the world's attention, or at least some on this poor pastor who's an American of Iranian descent, and he's in prison, in an Iranian prison right now. And I hope you've signed the petitions for him. I hope you've done whatever small thing you can do to make your voice known for him. I know that I have. And this man is in a terrible situation, in some unknown location, in some rotten situation. And you know what? God has not forgotten him. God won't forget the sparrow. He won't forget this man who so bravely suffers for him. So he says, so don't lose heart. Jesus assures the believer that God values you. You're precious in his sight. Matter of fact, he makes this analogy. You saw it in verse 7, that the very hairs of your head are all numbered. God knows. You know, it's been said that a redhead has about 90,000 hairs on their head. A dark-haired person has about 120,000 hairs, and a blonde person has about 145,000 hairs on their head. Now, I don't know how this counts when people get their hair colored. I can't figure that out. However many the exact number of hairs on your head is, God knows. He knows. Now, if God knows such trivial, and might I say, unsubstantial information about us, don't you think he knows and cares about the things that really matter? He does know the important things, and he cares. Because why? Verse 7, you are of more value than many sparrows. The person who is persecuted or suffering, it's so easy for them to feel forgotten, but it's so precious for them to realize before God, I have not forgotten you, God says. I know that you feel that I'm distant. I know that you wonder whether or not I'm really there, but I want you to remember, I have not forgotten you. A loving God values each one. Now, before we go on, I need to make one more point from verses 4 and 5. Matthew chapter 10, verse 29 tells us that you could buy 2 sparrows for 1 copper coin. Now, here in Luke chapter 12, we learn that for 2 copper coins, you could buy 5 sparrows. Do you get the math there? There is a quantity discount for buying sparrows. You know, one costs 0.5 of a copper coin and the other 0.4 of a copper coin. And we think this is the entire rationale behind Costco. And large, you know, if they had Costco back, you'd go back there and you'd buy a whole crate of sparrows for I don't know how many copper coins. But there they are. The 5 sparrows cost 2 copper coins, and 2 sparrows cost 1. That's the math. I thought somebody in here would be interested in that. Is there a single person here who found that interesting? Okay, good. At least one. That's all. I just needed one. Just one. Verse 8. Also I say to you, again, focus in. Jesus is speaking to his disciples about the threat of persecution and the attitude they're supposed to have. And his words right here are sobering. Verse 8. Also I say to you, whoever confesses me before men, him the Son of Man will also confess before the angels of God. But he who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. And anyone who speaks a word against the Son of Man, it will be forgiven him. But to him who blasphemes against the Holy Spirit, it will not be forgiven. Listen, those words, will not be forgiven, should make you wake up right now. What is he talking about? Jesus is talking about a sin that will not be forgiven? I hope this gets your attention. Well, go back to verse 8. The first thing he says is, whoever confesses me before men, him the Son of Man will also confess before the angels of God. Jesus here comforts the faithful, explaining that the suffering Christian will be given the reward of allegiance and honor before the very throne of God. When he says there, before the angels of heaven, the idea is he's drawing on the Old Testament allusion that angels surround the throne of God. So it'll be in the very presence of God that Jesus says, Father, this one belongs to me. This one's mine. I'm not ashamed to put my arm around this sister, around this brother. They belong to me. He's with me, Dad. Now, doesn't that just humble you to think that Jesus might say that of you? That Jesus would not be ashamed to call me or to call you his brother and say, yes, Lord, this is it. How wonderful it is. I have confessed you before men. Now you said that you will confess me before my Father in heaven. You know, among the early Christians, there were a certain class of people who were highly honored. Now, of course, martyrs were honored, but the problem with martyrs, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, the martyrs were dead. And they honored their memory, and they honored what they did. Oh, yes, the early church honored its martyrs, but then there were a second category of people. They honored their confessors. And who was a confessor? A confessor in the early church was somebody who had endured some kind of great punishment and had not denied Jesus Christ, yet had survived. They weren't martyrs because they were still alive, but they had had a limb chopped off. They had been mutilated. They had been branded. They had been, their health had been broken because of the pitiful conditions, on and on. And these people were so honored in the early church. People who confessed Jesus before men and would not back down from it at all. I read the stories and hear the heritage of this, and it makes me want to be a confessor. It makes me want to be able to say, Jesus, I will witness to you this way, that I'll confess you and never back down before men to say that anybody would say that I would deny you. Because look at the flip side of it in verse 9. This is even almost more sobering. He who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. Even as there was an honorable reward for those who were faithful, for those who are not, Jesus says, I'll deny you.
There's much more Pastor David would like to share with you, but we've run out of time for today. This has been another edition of Enduring Word, the radio ministry of David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California. Pastor David will continue teaching verse by verse through the Gospel of Luke next time. You can order today's message for free by emailing us at radio@enduringword.com. Again, that address is radio@enduringword.com. Sometimes it is just easier to call. Our phone number here at the church is 805-730-1400. We'll be happy to help you. Again, that number to call is 805-730-1400. Now, here's Pastor David with some great information about the Enduring Word Commentary Series.
Hi, this is Pastor David Guzik. Over the years, God has led me to write simple Bible commentary through almost the whole Bible. At EnduringWord.com, you'll find free Bible resources that'll help you as you study God's Word. We're making these commentaries available in written format as well as audio. Here's Josh with more information about how you can support Enduring Word.
Thanks, Pastor David. We'd like to encourage you to consider supporting Enduring Word by partnering with us with a one-time gift or monthly donation. Your support helps this program extend its reach worldwide. Well, that's all the time we have for today. From all of the production team here at Enduring Word, we want to say thank you for tuning in. Next time, Pastor David will continue teaching through the Gospel of Luke. That's next time on Enduring Word.